Good afternoon, everyone. This is Andrea, and I'd like to welcome you to our latest webinar and podcast episode. A quick reminder on asking questions. If you're joining us live today, you have the opportunity to ask the question anytime. Just use the Q&A function on your Zoom control panel, and that will be answered at the end of this session. If you're viewing the recording or listening to the podcast later and would like to ask a question, feel free to contact us directly at smithinc.com. I'll now hand over to Mark Holton, SmithInc Director, who will be presenting Accounting Industry Trends and Benchmarks. Over to you, Mark.
Thanks very much, Andrea, and welcome, everybody. Welcome to another SmithInc webinar, the day after State of Origin Day, the day after Queensland luckily won that game last night. It's a shame you can't talk back to me on this one apart from chat, but feel free to have a go if you wish. What I'd like to do today is just concentrate a little bit on some of the key trends. I did this particular presentation at the Accounting and Business Expo in March earlier this year. A lot of people come up to me afterwards and said, can I get a copy of it? I said, of course. But to a large extent, what we're really looking at today is what's out there and how do you compare? So in half an hour, I haven't really got that much time to go through in depth some of these numbers. But I've long been a fan of the good, the bad, and the ugly report. I've also now become a bit of a fan of the Commonwealth Bank Pulse report on the accounting industry. So a large amount of it, what I'm going to put in front of you is the information in the most recent versions of those reports and how they relate to your firm. Now, how they relate to your firm depends totally on where you sit in comparison to the numbers. So without further ado, let's just move into some of the key areas and have a look at what the industry is actually doing at the moment. First one, let's take revenue. At latest count, the revenue per partner was roughly about 1.027. That's down a little bit on the previous report that GBU did, because then it was about 1,000,072. So there's been a slight drop in revenue there. The same thing can't be said for revenue per chargeable, because at 215K, that's up from 207 the previous count. And also revenue per full-time equivalent, which sits at around 170,000 per FTE, up from 167 where we sat last time. The interesting number, I suppose, here is the drop in revenue per partner. And bear in mind, everyone, all this information here ties back into the firms that did it and the information that was sitting in there when this data was done. A benchmark is a trend, it's an average, it's an indicator. It's something you could possibly measure your business against, but I think it's also a discussion point. When we move down to productivity, the productivity of all full-time equivalent staff was 54%. That was spot on what it was previously, so it hasn't improved. The chargeable, excluding partners, sat at around 73. That's down fractionally from 74 on the last report. And partners' productivity at 47% sits pretty solid. It was actually up a little bit, which I suppose does have some concern, but it was about 46% last count, up slightly. The question with that one is how many partners out there are spending too much time on the tools and not enough time working on their practice? That's a question for another day. Okay, team profile, the leverage staff members per partner, or the leverage rate as we know it, was spot on what it's been in the past, and that's at about 5.2. A little bit later, I'm going to pop up the count from 2014 to 2017 to 2021, and we'll see what's moved and what hasn't. The staff ratio, as in chargeable to non-chargeable, sat at about 4.1. Very similar to what it was previously. And the average staff salary was coming in at around $74,500. When we looked at expenses, the expenses were showing operating-wise at about 60.8, salaries at about 35, rent at about 5%. And that was very similar, up slightly in different areas, obviously, up slightly in salaries, also up slightly in rent, but not to any dramatic effect. Now, I noticed in the prep for this, a couple of people in the questions that they've sent through to me have asked very specific things, which are difficult to answer on an open webinar, but I'm more than happy to answer them later. But there was one comment around directors' partners, including their salaries at market value. In other words, not understated or overstated, and adjustments made to that effect. I think that's a brilliant idea. It's something that has concerned me a little bit over the years. It also concerns me with any clients that we're trying to benchmark and the businesses they do as well. So another person asked me whether the current EBIT is there after allowing for equity holders' salaries at market value. So a couple of good questions there. I don't have the answers in the results here. I'm not that close to the people who put them together. But as far as moving forward, I think those adjustments need to be looked at. And then we can really start to measure the efficiency of an accounting firm and certainly the profitability they derive. When we talk profitability, we were talking around 39.3% net profit before partners' salaries. That was 37 last count. The average partner is earning roughly about 391 before partner salaries, up from 379. And the full-time equivalent was earning about 64.7, up from 61. So there's obviously been increases in that particular area. But again, the challenge point is, are the salaries, if we then measured after partner salaries, truly commercially effective? And that's a question probably for another day. Cash flow. Single biggest issue with accounting firms, as we know, is lockup. The average WIP days across the industry was 25. But when you dig into this report, you then start to see differing figures for city-based firms, suburban-based firms, regional-based firms. We also see a lot of different differences in firms that have revenue of less than half a mil, up to 4 mil and over 4 mil. But certainly, it doesn't appear to me, looking at the numbers closely, that WIP and debtors have improved that dramatically. In fact, when we look at last time, the WIP count across the industry, it was about 25, 26 days. So no great change there. Debtors' days down a fraction, they were 50, and a lockup was about 76. I know for a fact with some of the firms I consult to and have worked with over the years, they would kill for figures like that. So, I mean, we need to have a good look at how we're doing things. The key thing, as you know, that will kill any service-based business is WIP, just like inventory can potentially kill any retail or manufacturing-based business. So, I mean, those figures look good on the surface, but I think we've got to dig a bit further on this one. Additionally, what are we doing? 60% of the industry report they're doing compliance, as in tax and accounting work. 10%. Are doing other business advisory services. I think that's miles too low, given the last 25 years, given the software, given the tools, the resources, and the drive that I'm out there seeing day in, day out. Why is that still so low? And I challenge that one too. I've got to be honest. Might as well have a go. I'm sitting here talking to myself. I challenge that as to whether the large number of accounting firms out there anywhere near 10%. I think it's probably 5% and under. We probably should even separate that one and say, okay, of that 10%, how much of the work being done is one-off compared to annuity? In other words, do we do quarterly board of advice meetings on a regular basis with multiple clients, or do we do the odd cash flow, the odd restructure, the odd succession plan, the odd estate plan? So in other words, breaking it up between piecemeal and annuity. I think the numbers are heavily favored on the piecemeal side of things at the moment. But then that's a challenge we all need to face in the future with our firms. Client profile. Roughly, the average client per partner sits at around 200 and the average client group fee at around 4,800. Again, that has not changed that dramatically over the period. So when we start to look at, you know, what the good, bad and ugly in some of the other key reports have been telling us for years. So we go back to 2011 to 12, we measure 2016 to 17 and 21 to 22. You can see revenue per partner has gradually been increasing, not surprising, as is revenue per full-time equivalent. Net profit's been increasing, but I wouldn't say that's dramatic, you know, from 34 to 39 over a large period of time. Net profit per partner before partner salaries, again, has gone up about 100K over that period. Interestingly, leverage, flat lines, sits there, actually dropped then creeps up a little bit again. And as you can see through this page, and again, we'll give you copies of all these slides, the improvement is there across the industry. Okay. The average hourly rate after write-offs, okay, 188 over 160 a number of years ago, in my mind, it's not increased near enough. The lockup days have come down, heaven forbid. Okay, but 69 in 2021 over some of the firms I'm seeing and some of the data in the report that's nowhere near 69 is still a concern. But I thought it was interesting just to take a snapshot of the past, have a look at where we sat 5 or 6 years ago and where we currently sit at the moment. I suppose the challenge now is what happens in 2023. So let's have a look at a couple of other key benchmarks here. Maybe not benchmarks, but more so trends that the industry are getting up to. Okay, when we look at the predominant reason for exit over the next 12 months, okay, we can see 17% dissatisfied with other partners. 58% is saying my time has come. It's time for me to move on, go and sit in the sun. And 58% dissatisfied with the profession. I think that's a major issue. And when we look at the documented firm succession plans in place, why is this so low? Why are 21% of firms notified that they have a succession plan? 79% are saying, no, I'm going to get around to it. Maybe did it a while ago. I think this tracks back to strategy planning in your firm. When was the last time you did a strategic planning day? What were the actions that come out of it? Did you hold yourself accountable to that action plan? And did you revisit it every 12 months? Every board I sit on now, we meet 12 monthly to revise the action plan. And every board meeting, we go over how we're tracking towards our SMART goals, our aspirations, and our structures. Why are we taking so long to do this in the industry? I know we're busy. Don't get me wrong. I know we're busy. But are we too busy to set SMART strategy? Looking to acquire fees in the next 12 months, 60% of firms said yes, 40% said no, thanks. I'll stick with the ones I've got. Doesn't surprise me for a minute, this one. Seeing more and more M&A work out there than ever before. The other thing that the report asked was, what are you getting up to? What are you trying to do in your firms to make more profit? 54% said we're training the team more than ever. Streamlining workflow, growing the overall top line, good numbers. Improving profitability. Oh, we're happy with the current results. We're not making any changes. 5%. Well, there's 95% of firms saying they're not happy and they need to make change. Utilizing fixed fee pricing, 40% and growing across the years. Increasing fees, 45%. Why is that so low? Everybody else increased fees as an office. None of them asked for permission. Why are we so reluctant to increase fees when we're incurring much more in overhead cost every year? And growing the overall bottom line, 34%. Encouraging growth, strategies, desires. Is all this part of your strategic focus in the firm and your strategic plan? Then how far do you want to grow the overall top line and how are you going to do it? It's easy to say we will do. It's not so easy to achieve. Moving on, what else are the firms looking at? Certainly acquiring better fee parcels, not much. Delegating client contact to other team members, the free partner's time, that has to happen. Too many partners are on the tools for too long. Delegating lower level work to more appropriate team members, good stuff. Improving the quality of clients, I suppose that comes back to, do you have an ideal client profile in the first place? And are you following it? Are you recruiting against it? Are you attracting clients to it? Do your staff know? Recording all past time. Oh, geez, in my time, guys, and I was guilty of this as well, I presume some of you are, who's the worst one at doing timesheets? Undoubtedly the partners. Okay, so we're focusing a little bit on improving that. And implementing advisory. You know, I've seen more interest and I've been spoken to more times with accounting firms saying, I want to go down the advisory pathway. I want to put in a system, a process. I want to put in a division. I want to do things differently. I want to help my good clients out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a falling over point from the point of wanting to do it to how we do it, when we do it, and how committed you are to make that happen. So it's encouraging to know the industry are looking at doing more. My question is, are you going to do it in a laissez-faire style or do it in a more structured process, system, and people-orientated style? And technology, the last one. We're all leveraging technology. I'll talk to you a little bit about something I've got a bit of a bugbear about later. I think some of the technology out there is brilliant. I've yet to see a bad piece out there. My question is, how do you leverage it? How do you turn it into a service? How do you bill it? How do you get clients engaged? Much same problem as you have with advisory in the first place. Partner charge rates. Okay, the lowest, $90. By golly, who would charge that? I hope nobody online. Up to the highest at about 600, an average of about 327 per hour. Probably creeped up a little bit, I would think, over the last 12 months as well. Primary method of calculating invoices, time, as in WIP by charge rate, 24%, significantly dropped on previous years. Valuing the bill, we think the job is worth, 33%. I think that's encouraging. Review WIP, but look at last year's fee and increase it by a certain percentage. There it is. It's out on the table. Okay. We say we're a time-based biller, but we always look at what we charged last year. Then the thought process is we can't charge less. We'll charge the same. If not, we'll charge a fraction more. We're value-based billers. We're just time trackers. Interesting stats there. 90% of work being written off by Australian accounting firms before it's being billed. Is that high? Yes. Has it increased? Yes. What does it represent? Just under $200,000 written off per firm per year, which comes back to how efficient is your process? How efficient are your staff, your systems, your structures, your technology? Okay, we've got to start to look at improving that. We can't let that one escalate. Fixed price agreements, does your firm currently offer them? 81% said yes, wonderful. 19% said no. And what percentage of your firm's fees are subject to fixed price agreements? And you can see the figures there, the upper quartile of fees are certainly there. 37% is the average in that space. So where's the biggest challenges for accounting firms as we come towards the end of our time together? I think the biggest challenges I see are recruiting and retaining the right staff. And it's not just finding them. As I'm talking to many firms, it's holding on to them. It's holding on to them when the employee wants a different working style than they've had in the past, maybe a hybrid working style. Maybe they're looking for alternatives to what's currently happening. I know I'm seeing more firms get more creative in their salary packaging and the benefits they're offering staff, to try to, one, get them through the door, and secondly, to recruit them. But I've also seen an explosion in outsourcing, guys, and I think that's a consequence of how difficult it is to get local talent. Improving the efficiency of your firm's processes and deliverables. Is there ever a firm that is 100% efficient? I've yet to meet them, but I know we're all driving towards that. So what can we do with our systems and processes to create greater efficiencies? What can we do to reduce our turnaround time, reduce the number of open jobs, improve productivity, not of the partners, but of the key staff and operatives, so the partners can get out there and do what partners do, and that's engage with current clients and recruit and hunt the new ones. I'm hearing over and over again, I don't have time to do that. I'm even hearing out there with firms that we're not looking to take on clients because we can't handle the ones we've got. But when you dig into the ones they've got, they're certainly not A class or B class. There's too many of those emotional vampires floating around, sucking up your capacity. Automating manual processes. I asked a Young Guns event recently, what do you think will be the next manual process that will be subject to automation? It was really encouraging with some of the younger guys, and we do this with our Young Guns conference every year, who have a big picture understanding of where they think the industry will go and how they want to seize that technology change and integrate it into better processes, better systems, more profitability and success for their firms. getting the right clients. Well, I'll go back to something I said earlier. Do you have an ideal client profile? Have you sat down and worked it out? Have you communicated it to your team? Do you hunt clients on that basis? Do you recruit staff that are capable of delivering qualities of service to the ideal clients? And do you want more of or less of a particular type of client in your firm? If you're not doing this as part of your strategy planning and part of your strategic focus, I think we're missing the plot here a fraction, guys. I think we need to build stronger relationships with existing clients through innovative value-added services. I'm seeing more firms move into divisionalized, more diversified sources of income. I'm seeing firms moving into HR and setting up HR divisions, moving into IT, setting up IT divisions. Obviously, if not in or doing, then they move into financial planning and setting up a division there and cover off things like finance. I'm seeing firms moving into mortgage lending, okay, so leasing and lending, and creating separate divisions. And by that, I mean they don't go and take an accountant, move them out of their comfort zone, and say, congratulations, you're now a financial planner or a HR exec or an IT support person or a mortgage broker. They recruit properly within the division and resource it appropriately. Why, oh, why, when it comes to advisory, do we take good compliance accountants out of their comfort zone and say, congratulations, you'll be a great, you know, business advisory person in our firm? You got to get the right person, guys. You got to look for people who want to be storytellers, want to engage clients in this particular piece, and do what a number of my firms have done and go and recruit someone who's not a tax accountant. That way you won't be tempted to drag them back into the tax system when things get busy. I think a challenge will be new technological advances and turning them into build services. We've all seen artificial intelligence. You'd have to be blind not to have noticed ChatGPT. But how do we take it, turn it into a service, bill it appropriately, and engage a client to the point that they actually want this? Nobody's talking about that. They're all saying, look how good it is. Look what it does. You know, we're talking about, will it affect the way we do our current business? Yeah, maybe, probably. But at the end of the day, how do we take it, leverage it, seize the opportunity, and turn it into something new, innovative, that the clients actually want? And I'll leave you with this thought finally, and that is, I think something for the industry is to improve the efficiency by implementing the right fit-for-purpose technology. Fit-for-purpose means get the technology to improve what you're doing, not get the technology, then work out what you're doing. I see this happen far too much with advisory. We go and we buy something that looks great. We never ever think about, will the client like it, love it, pay for it, but it looks good. Okay. We then start to think, what do we do with it? I'd be investing in technology to improve efficiency of your systems, processes, and people. And I'd be looking for the right piece of technology to do the right service at the right time, at the right rate. So I think we need to start to have a more strategic focus. I think, in summary, we need to have a more strategic focus around our firm, what we're trying to achieve. We can take this benchmarking data, and you're more than welcome to the slides that I've put together, but there's great reports out there like, you know, the Good, Bad and Ugly, like benchmarking.com, like the Pulse reports that are coming out from the different banks out there, and some of the other industry folk that are communicating this data as well. I just look at it as a piece of data to take on, measure the performance, but I don't look at it as I must get to that level, because I think the figures are far broader based on where the firms are across the country and the world, based on their turnover, based on their staffing, based on their clientele. So I think this is a great trend point. And on that basis, Andrea, with a couple of minutes to go, I'll pass back to you for anyone that has any particular questions.
Great. Thanks, Mark. If you would like to ask a question or mention the state of origin, please put it in the Q&A function and I'll read that out for you. We've had only one comment so far, Mark, about the state of origin. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, well, there couldn't be many Queenslanders here then.
If you do, of course, I'll just give it a moment if anybody would like to ask anything of Mark. I think Mark mentioned already there were a few questions, quite a few questions submitted when people were registering. They're quite detailed. So we'll get in contact if you do want to have a chat to Mark about that at some point. We'll tee up a time, a little bit much for the 30 minutes that we have today. The recording will be available and I'll get that sent out to everybody this afternoon and available on the podcast.
Andrea, given there's a couple of minutes left, I'll just bring up a couple of the questions.
Okay.
And this really, it's not to answer today, but more so to get people online to start thinking.
Yeah.
There's a question saying that profitability and client retention are key metrics for us. I'm interested how others capture this data. Interestingly, with our Young Guns event last year, we held a catch-up with the guys that had been at that event. They are now networking, asking others questions, collaborating together, and doing it all through a WhatsApp focus. I'm interested, and by the way, you don't have to type anything in, but I'm interested in the future how we can do that type of thing better with some of our webinars, how we can create maybe a WhatsApp user group where people could ask questions and not only David and I could answer them, but other people online could also contribute to that and share ideas, resources, and everything else. There was another question, Andrea. Interested to hear about success of any specific financial incentives used for accounting teams. And again, these things are very specific items. Another one was how to set appropriate KPIs and rewarding performance that exceeds and deals with performance that does not exceed. That's an hour to 2 to 3 to 10. Alone on itself, how do we actually measure this stuff? You know, do we tie our KPIs into remuneration and tie them back where the performance doesn't meet the KPI when it comes to reviews of remuneration? How do we balance that in with the difficulty getting staff and holding on the staff? So some excellent questions, Andrea, and I'm really concerned we haven't got time to answer them specifically. Mm-hmm. But I'm more than happy to take any of them offline. In fact, guys, those that have asked questions, I'll get Andrea to reach out to you and see if you want us to want to organise a time to have a bit of a chat offline. But also have a bit of a think about, can we put together a bit of a Smith Inc. user group like the Young Guns, share ideas, resources, ask the questions, and feed off the experience that undoubtedly is out there in the marketplace.
Thanks, Mark. I'm not sure if you've seen the latest question come in. There, I'll read it out for you. There are some consultants driving fee income on a 4x salary model. Any comments?
Yeah, Stu, I saw that question just pop up there. I have seen that happen. I don't see it regularly. I think the multiple is a little bit lower than 4, but by golly, if you can get away with 4x salary model, I think it's brilliant. And I'll ask anyone online who wants to pop something in or say anything. What's your thoughts on that?
Thanks, Mark. Just give it a moment and see if anybody wants to add to that. John's question, who mentioned the state of origin?
Yeah. It was John Stiff. Obviously, he's a Queenslander, and he's only one of them online. Thank goodness.
You got away pretty well, I think. I think that might be it today, Mark. As Mark mentioned, we will get in contact to set up a time about those other questions in a bit more detail. Thank you, Mark, for presenting today, and thanks, everybody, for attending.
My pleasure, Andrea. Thanks, guys. Happy to have a chat anytime.